This is tape 7 of the PDH online course E315 Industrial HVAC Control. I'm going to start talking about PLC inputs. The plant PLC controls construction document contain the following illustrations. Now, this is difficult to impossible to convey orally. I'll do my best, but you've got to accept an inferior product or spend a little time looking at the pictures when you get a chance. We're doing a ladder diagram, relay ladder diagram, relay ladder logic, formally. We've got the L conductor on the left vertical rung, 120 volt source. We've got the neutral conductor on the right. The first control device is a safety switch. It's called FreeStat 1. It has a peculiar symbol that is traditional for a FreeStat in the normally open, held, closed condition. As I mentioned previously, there are some, conventions in relay ladder logic that have just become embedded over the decades. If the switch is on the top of the two contacts, it's normally a shelf condition open where some action pushes it closed. Now, this is a lever type switch that's connected on one side and just comes down on the other side. Not the FreeStat. The FreeStat is a normally open, held, closed. Now, by convention, we show these in shelf condition. There are exceptions, but they're rare and they cause trouble. What you try to follow on these is show it the way it is. If it's not part of a circuit, you pick it up off the shelf and look at it. What do you find? Well, this is a FreeStat that is set to open at 40 degrees F, and it says open at 40 degrees F. So it will be held closed by the temperature as long as the temperature is above 40 degrees F. When it drops below 40 degrees, it opens the contacts. Now, this peculiar diagram that I was trying to explain to you, and I don't think I'm able to, the switch contact's pretty straightforward. We got the two little knobbies, power goes in, power goes out. We've got a lever switch connected to one of them, the one on the left, and it hangs down. It's actually being pushed up to make contact with the one on the right by the thermostat. What is a thermostat? Well, a thermostat is obviously a lot of different things that respond physically to temperature. Bimetallic thermostat is the concept everybody uses, and you can buy them. I mean, it's a very realistic representation. You can open up especially an older thermostat and see the bimetallic element. One side expands faster than the other, so it bends. And that's what this is trying to show. It's showing a zigzag line that will stretch out when it heats. And that's the FreeStat. FreeStat is a common parlance. Technical term for this would be temperature switch low, TSL. Again, going back to the ISA stuff we talked about a while back, ISA does not have much crossover to relay ladder logic. There are a few, and we may note them as we run into them. Now, relay ladder logic has the concept of a series. The electricity starts on one side, goes through the first element, goes through the second element, third element, fourth element, finally reaches the load, energizes the load, and something good happens. In this case, we've got two series devices. The first series device is the FreeStat. The second is an odd little symbol, which is a rotated square, so a four-sided diamond. Does that make any sense? Coming in the point on the left, going out the point on the right. Inside the diamond, it says DO, which stands for discrete output. A lot of people say digital output. That is an error. So many things are digital in the world anymore that you better save digital for where you're clearly distinguishing between analog and digital. And yeah, you could say we have analog inputs, analog outputs, digital inputs, digital outputs on PLC, but we also have digital communication. So we have a lot of digital ports. If you say discrete output, that kind of handles the idea of binary. It has a value of 0 or 1. Matter of fact, I've noticed some HVAC diagrams where they use the term B0 for binary output and BI for binary input. That is not a standard notation, standard to the guy who does it, but not to the rest of the world. DI and DO representing discrete input and discrete output. Notation above the digital output is start/run command, 2-1-8. Now this is where we start getting into this hairy mess about tag lists. Why do you say 2-1-8? Well, because obviously you've got to run the wire from the freestat into this discrete output. Where do you find that discrete output? You find that in the PLC rack in rack 2, card 1, position 8. So 218 means rack, slot, position, or terminal. I'm trying to think because it takes two terminals for a circuit. So is it really position 8 or terminal 8? Tell you what, we're going to see some examples in a minute. But you can see it's confusing. It means something to the fellow who's wiring it. It doesn't mean anything to the guy who's reading the logic. Okay, we have the electricity come in through the freestat. It goes through the discrete output. Now, is the discrete output open or closed? Again, when we're testing this with our finger, which is what you do with relay ladder logic, you say, well, that's closed, our finger goes through it. And you kind of remember in your head, if that's closed, we get this far. If that's not closed, we don't get this far. The rung splits after the DO. It goes first into the motor starter, called motor starter 636, then into the overload protective relays, and finally into the neutral. Now, what is a motor starter? Motor starter, I remember it as ker-chunk. It's the electromechanical device. It has a big old magnet, which I believe is called a magnet, wound coil around a core, and pulls down a clapper. The clapper is attached to electric contacts. When the electric contacts make, then large power current flows through the motor contactor and goes up to the fan. Overloads are a very peculiar historic oddity. The technology is trying to replace them, but old guys like me are fighting it tooth and nail. We trust overloads. Overloads always work. They protect the motor when it's overloaded, just like they're supposed to, and they protect it from a bunch of other weird things that sometimes happen to motors, and there's no other way to protect it. Now, what is an overload? Traditionally, overloads are available in two forms, eutectic alloy and bimetallic. Bimetallic is the same thing as a freestat. There's a heater in an overload, heats up the bimetallic element, which breaks open a contact. It's a pilot element carrying 1 amp to the motor starter, the motor contactor. Okay, that is the bimetallic overload. Note there's a heater and there's a relay contact. So it's called an overload relay. And we often talk about the overload heaters. That's a separate part that can be removed from the relay. Doesn't work without the heater, but the heater is sized to closely match the characteristics of the motor. Now that doesn't mean that there are an infinite number of overload heaters available. There's one for 1 horsepower, there's one for 1.5 horsepower, there's one for 2 horsepower, 2.5, 3, 5, 7.5, 10. There are a large number of heaters available, but not an unlimited number. And usually they only go up to, this is recollection, not looking it up in the catalog, up to maybe 50 horsepower. The reason is, over 50 horsepower, you use very somewhat specialized control circuits, and typically a current transformer on the motor leads. So instead of getting the actual motor current through the overload heater, you get a replica of the motor current through the overload heater. So if the motor takes 50 amps full load, you go through a current transformer that makes 5 amps full load. So you would have a 5 amp heater with the current transformer on that particular motor. Now again, we're talking about overloads because overloads are important. If they don't work, the motor doesn't work. If somebody makes a mistake and puts in too big an overload, the motor works, but it's not protected. So the overloads are significant, and that's the old guy and me talking. New guys say, hey, we can do that all in digital and software, and it's just as good and it's so much cheaper. Well, yeah, but if there's a mistake, it doesn't work. Can't have a mistake with a motor overload. There is just no way they don't function. When too much current flows, it directly interrupts the motor starter circuit and it stops. Now, I was mentioning some of the peculiar things that overloads protect you from. There is a Sharp salesman, you can recognize him by the very nice suit and the $400 shirt and all that stuff, who wants to sell you single phase protection, and there's another name for it, reverse sequence protection. Well, that's a great thing, and it works fine, and it protects you. Why would you ever think of that? Because on very rare circumstances, and I mean like once in 20 years, there is a single phase event where you got your three power wires coming in and one of them gets broken for whatever reason. You only got two power wires coming in. Now, a peculiarity of AC motors is they work fine with two of the three wires with some limitations. First, if you're trying to get 100% of the horsepower out of the thing and you only got one third of the electricity going in, something's going to give. Typically, it's going to slow down, maybe stall. It's going to draw too much current. Hey, wow, we've got an overload relay that measures the current through the conductors. When too much draws, it trips it out. So, under most circumstances, single phasing is protected by a conventional overload that's in every motor circuit. You don't have to buy anything special for it. You don't have to program it. You don't have to set it. It is inherent in the overload relay, which to me is a bargain. And again, they're relatively inexpensive compared with the cost of the motor starter and the motor and everything it costs to make the project work. The motor starter is a small part of it. So when these guys tell me, nah, they'll just do it in their electronic controls, I say, nah, you'll just put an electromechanical overload after your electronic controls, and we'll consider it an emergency stop. Okay, that's the story here. Freestat, DO, operates the motor starter if and only if the overloads say it's okay. Now, on this particular circuit, we're taking a break before the motor start and coming down and operating a damper motor on the supply fan. We just started the exhaust fan. Now we're operating the damper motor. Now at that same point in the middle between the DO and the motor starter where we were going down, we keep going down and we get to a damper motor end of travel limit switch. And it's shown down because it's shelf condition open. When the damper motor goes into full end of travel, it closes it. So electricity can continue to through this, and it goes to the motor starter and overloads for the starter motor. Okay, what do? We had the power command, goes through the freestat, goes through the DO, branches off here, goes down to the end of travel limit switch. End of travel limit switch waits till the damper motor is in full open position, then it lets the electricity through to start the motor starter on the supply fan, and there are overloads on the supply fan. It's not done yet. When we go through the freestat and we go through the DO, and then we branch down and we go through the end of travel limit switch, that means it's trying to start the fan. When we get to the place we're trying to start the fan, we branch off and go to a square box in the conventional orientation that's called a DI. And this is a motor start monitor. Now, this is traditional. We have done this forever and ever. If the motor starter has power, we tell everybody the motor has started. What happens if the overload trips it out? We tell everybody the motor has started. What if the motor is stalled? We tell everybody the motor is started. There's nothing in this that relates back to the motor starter, even if it trips the overload. It has no effect on, it stops the part of the circuit that goes through the motor starter, does not stop the part of the circuit that goes through the DI to tell the PLC that the motor started. What if the fan belt breaks? Most of these fans are operated on belts. Belts break. That's characteristic of belts. Nobody knows. We tell everybody it's working fine. And nobody complains about this. I mean, this is the way it works. It's always been this way. Okay, we have now studied design for supply fan 1, exhaust fan 1, full voltage, non-reversing, motor control center, HV. And there's narration here, which repeats what I just told you. And especially if you've never heard these words before, it is certainly valuable to say the words again. The freestat is a room thermostat used to lock out the supply fan and exhaust fan when the room temperature is below 40 F. A convention I insist upon is indicating the set point of the switch as opens below 40 F. This is not conventional in the industry. You know there's a switch there. You don't know if it's normally open or normally closed. You don't know when it changes state, and you don't know the direction when it changes state. And I'm a stickler on this. I mean, I forget things so rapidly. I have to have it written down if I'm going to be out there troubleshooting it. Start run command is a discrete output, DO, from the PLC. It originates in rack 2, card 1.8. These are not internal PLC representation of the point. Obviously, the PLC, being a computer, uses numbers to represent the data point. This is not the number it uses to represent the data point. The exhaust fan motor starter is on the first line, followed by its overload protective relay contacts. Notation is a bit peculiar and hard to justify, but long-standing and impossible to change without a revision in the National Electric Code. Now, I slipped that in there, and I hope you caught it. This is enforced by law as the National Electric Code. The overload relays go at the end between the motor starter and the neutral return. That's the way it has to be. Control voltage flows through the freestat, through the DO, that is if the DO is enabled, through the motor starter coil, through the protective relay contacts. Follow it with your finger is the special value of relay logic. What was I reading today? Oh, I was working on an ethics course. I highly recommend my new ethics course to people who've taken my previous two ethics courses. I was working on the new ethics course, and a professor at Texas A&M was telling how motor starters work using Boolean algebra. I said, my God, what planet do you live on? Forgive me. What did we just do? We just talked about following it with your finger is the special value of relay logic. Perhaps if you're smart enough and know Boolean algebra, you can follow that with your fingers too. But it looks something from a Saturday morning cartoon. If the freestat is made, the DO is made. The voltage is present at the vertical line before the motor starter coil. This means it's available to the damper motor. The voltage available on the vertical ladder rung is on the hot side of the damper motor end of travel limit switch. After the damper motor, actually a gear motor, runs for about a minute, the end of travel switch makes and the voltage is available to the supply fan motor starter. In addition to the voltage being available to the supply fan motor starter, it's available to the PLC discrete input. This does not mean that the fan is operating. It means that there is voltage available to the starter coil. Some designs use an auxiliary contact on the motor starter to drive the DI. Again, this does not mean the fan is operating. It means the motor starter contactor has pulled in. Now, this is hybrid notation. It's mostly field wiring with the addition of PLC inputs and outputs and field devices. It clearly explains how the controls are supposed to work. This is control logic. Unfortunately, it's not the form issued for construction in 1993. Below is the actual information that was issued to the field. Now, this is a big, complex drawing. We're only going to look at one rung of it. Again, they've got power on the left-hand side. They've got the input module in the middle and the neutral on the right. Hey, that sounds like a ladder logic diagram. Between the source on the left-hand side and the input module is something called EF8. It's a normally open contact. MS-760, 10541, 1141, going into Terminal 16. Now, what is going on here? Okay, this is that status contact we were talking about. They used an auxiliary contact from EF-8 to go into the input module to tell the PLC that EF-8 is running. Now, when I was putting these illustrations together for you, I wanted to show you two forms of it. One is a common return input module, and the other is an isolated input, which I called an isolated return module. Everybody with me on the first one? Source, switch, input module, neutral. Hey, I mean, it's a series circuit, and it's in the ladder logic form. Now, the second one, the isolated input, is something that's hard to wrap your head around the first time. It starts with an isolated input module. That's this slot thing with all the different terminals on it. Instead of using one terminal for the input and having the whole module connected to ground, we're going to use two terminals for the input. And instead of having the source start on the left and have the load on the right, like all right-thinking Americans do, this thing starts with the existing motor starter on the right and not even shown. And we're going to pick two points off that existing motor starter. The two points we're picking are the auxiliary contact for the motor starter and the neutral over there. So there should be juice there. When the contact pulls in, it's got a source going to this contact. We don't care about that. The load side of the contact comes over here, will be the load, and then it goes from here back to the neutral over there. Interestingly, this is called terminal 14, wire number 7621, MS-760, and 760 neutral, and it's called exhaust fan EF-8. Did you catch that? In the issued set, we showed the input from EF-8 two times on two different modules. This is an error. Is it a logic error, a drafting error, or a boo-boo? I think technical term is blunder. And that's not our concern here. The reason we're talking about this is that there's a lot of information here. Wire numbers, field device tags, PLC rack slot, terminal numbers, internal PLC programming tag. But we have two problems. The exhaust fan that is circled there is shown on two different inputs. You can't do that. The wires have to go one place or the other. Now, in theory, you could have two different auxiliary contacts, but that's not what's going on here. This is a mistake, even though it's a mistake made in 1993 or a mistake made in 2009. I chose the two modules to demonstrate the difference between common return inputs and isolated return inputs. After I copy them into the course material, I notice that the same fan is on both. Well, that answers the question, which is better? Obviously, for any particular circuit, both are acceptable. Now, we're going to discuss this more, but it happens one of the trick questions on the quiz is, which is better, common return input or isolated return input? And the correct answer is, both are acceptable. Second problem is that the 1994 installation crew claimed they could not figure out how to wire the controls. Whoa! Well, that's kind of a drop-dead situation, isn't it? A wiring matrix was hastily prepared and issued to the field. Either it met their needs, or they figured out how to use the original construction documents without it. In any event, there were no more complaints. The wiring matrix is partially reproduced below. Now, my immediate inclination is to say, this is one of the weirdest things I've ever seen. But it's not. It is a standard convention used by General Electric on high-powered switchgear from, when computers came in. I guess the mainframe's about the 70s. They issued wiring diagrams for switchgear in matrix form. And their technicians could read them, and their startup guys could read them, and their service engineers, who were among the best in the world, could read them, and I couldn't read them. And I can still study at them and maybe dope out a little information, but a matrix wiring diagram is not natural to me. In this one that was actually issued in 1994, first column is drawing, second column is digital or analog in. Now, I think it's a digital in, and there's a typo there. Analog in and out, VO number, I don't know what that means, wire number, device description. And let me read you the first one, E16.3. Yeah, there's a sheet that's 24 by 36 that's called sheet E16.3. This one is an analog out. It is number 4-3-2. It has wire numbers 11241 and 11251. It is device number DMC700. Now, from reading the 1993 drawings, I know that DMC means damper motor contactor. And under device description, it says damper motor controller. Okay, so this apparently told the field people what they needed to know, or they got sick of dealing with the engineers. Wiring matrix is an interesting concept, and obviously for people it works for, it works, and for people it doesn't work for, it doesn't. Now, is that a meaningless statement? No, I don't think so. I think if I am communicating to designers of industrial systems, I am telling you to spend a moment viewing your audience before you put the pen to paper, before you start sketching out the concept in anticipation of drafting it. Figure out what is going to communicate from your head to their head, what is going to help them do the wiring and get the project running, what you're going to be able to use if you're out in the field helping them start it. Let me address the question of common return inputs and isolated return inputs. Each input responds to a voltage between two terminals. When energized, one terminal is high and the other terminal is a return to provide reference for the first. If an input is being picked off a contact midway down a string of safeties, then it is essential that the return be isolated. Otherwise, it will short out the circuit. Now, to me, that means something. And if you're the intended audience that doesn't do motor controls on a daily basis, it may not mean anything to you at all. What is a string of safeties? That means there's a first switch in series with a second switch, in series with a third switch, in series with a fourth switch, fifth switch, sixth switch, and finally it reaches the master safety relay. Now, what the purpose of the master safety relay is, when everything's good, the master safety relay pulls in. If there's a break in the wire or any of the switches open, the master safety relay opens and all of the equipment shuts down. In NFPA 79, which is a very interesting document if you do a lot of motor controls, NFPA 79 was Industrial Motor Cabinets or some such thing, but it was before the NEC took over motor controls. The NEC now has very detailed requirements on how you do cabinets for machine control. Before that, there was a voluntary standard, which was an NFPA publication, but it was voluntary, enforced by people like General Motors. I mean, it wasn't like it wasn't enforced, but it wasn't enforced by the government. Okay, now again, string of safeties. And we want to find out if, let's say it's the freestat. We're real interested in the freestat. Maybe we're real interested in each of them, but we're going to do one and the second one, third, and then the fourth one. What we're saying is if you have an isolated input, you put one wire on one side of the switch and the other wire on the other side of the switch, and the input is going to tell you if there's voltage across that switch. Now, that's all it's going to tell you, and that's a bogus measure, because it requires that everything else be in good condition. This is the only one that's in bad condition. That's the only place voltage is going to exist. If two switches are out, you won't have voltage across that switch. So what you really want to do is you want to pick the low side of that switch and the control circuit neutral. Then you'll find if voltage has been made up to that point. It won't really tell you if the freestat is open or closed, but it will tell you if everything is made up to the freestat. Now, is this something you want to do? Yeah. When you've got a machine out of service and the company is losing $10,000 an hour because you're not ker-chunking widgets, you got to find out what's wrong and fix it. And just between you and me, usually it's a safety switch that tripped off on its own. Not because there's a safety hazard, but because the damn switch vibrated loose or some such thing. And all you have to do is push that button and it's going to run again for 2 weeks until it trips out again. Eventually you're going to have to replace the switch. This is the kind of things that maintenance people do. Now, yeah, you have real maintenance problems. You got to really fix it. But that's not what most of the maintenance problems are. They're little silly things that a skilled operator or a skilled maintenance technician can take care of pretty quickly. But an ordinary technician may spend 2 hours figuring out you got to push the red button for it to work again. Okay, so the engineer's been through this and he wants to enunciate each of the safeties. And that's where we get the idea of the common input or the isolated input. Now, according to my clock, I've run a little over for this session. Let's take a break now and come back and talk about foreign voltages.